Hello and welcome to the news, recorded on Wednesday the 5th of July. I'm Louise.
I'm Margaret.
And I'm Beth.
And your sound engineer this week is Martin. This week, we welcome the following new members, Alec Glover and Victor Stanton. We hope you will enjoy receiving your discs. Next, we would like to say a big thank you to the listeners who have kindly sent us a donation last week towards the funding of our Talking News and magazine. They are Flo Partridge and Joan Simmons. So once again, thank you for your donations, which really count towards the running of the Talking newspaper and magazine. And now Margaret will start us off with the news.
One of the biggest shake-ups of local elections in Dudley Borough's history is being put to residents to have their say. Dudley Council chiefs have put forward radical proposals to hold local elections every 4 years. Currently, the council elects in thirds with 24 seats out of the total of 72 up for grabs every year, with elected councillors sitting for 3 years once they are elected. There is a break where no elections are being held every 4 years. But under the new plans, if agreed by the council, people would head to the polls every 4 years to elect 72 councillors, who will be in place until the next elections in 4 years' time. The plans have been put forward as part of the budget setting agreed by the council in April. Sarah Norman, Chief Executive of Dudley Council, said, "It is important we listen to local people when considering these proposals. There are many advantages and disadvantages to both systems, but it will be really interesting to see what people make of the proposals. Members of the council will vote on the proposals later this year." As part of the budget plans, councillors agreed to gauge public opinion on the proposals before it is voted on in the council later this year. People will be able to go online and cast their vote in one or two options, keeping the current yearly elections where people have their say at the polls every 12 months, or opt for the new all-out elections where people vote every 4 years. Hard copies of the consultation are also available in borough libraries and leisure centres throughout the 12-week consultation. The consultation is open until September the 15th, and the results will be put to a meeting of the full council in October this year, where members will vote on the outcome. Two-thirds of councillors must vote in favour of the change before it is agreed.
A council boss has revealed that a temporary traveller site could be built in Dudley in a bid to tackle illegal camps. Leaders at Dudley Council have been looking at suitable sites in the borough. It comes after travellers set up camp on two playing fields last week, prompting a row between politicians over how to tackle the problem. Councillor Les Jones, Cabinet Member for Housing, said, "Myself and Councillor Karen Shakespeare have been looking to see if there is a suitable site for a transient site. One could help us tackle illegal traveller camps. It has to be something that we look at in the future." Transient sites see travellers pay a fee to stop there. These sites also bring in greater powers for councils to tackle illegal camps. Travellers pitched up on Milking Bank last week, near to Milking Bank Primary School, before they moved on to Grange Park. Around 40 caravans moved on to Milking Bank on Tuesday, June the 20th, before moving on to Grange Park and then leaving the latter site by Monday morning. Dudley North MP Ian Austin criticised Dudley Council and West Midlands Police over the length of time it took to move on the travellers. He tweeted, "It is outrageous. Been there since Tuesday. I went today, on Saturday, and there are over 40 caravans. I've been urging the council and police to sort it out." He asked Councillor Jones why it had taken so long, adding, "It is a complete disgrace." Councillor Jones, responding on Twitter, tweeted, "So long. Bailiffs used to move one from site one. Action already in process for site two. Council staff threatened with knives. Get real, Ian." He said a member of council staff who was standing outside the entrance to the playing field in Milking Bank was threatened with knives by travellers, but the incident wasn't reported to police. In neighbouring Sandwell, plans are in the pipeline to build a transient site which would give Sandwell Council greater powers to tackle illegal camps. The neighbouring local authority brought in new powers earlier this year that allowed them to move on travellers from council-owned land within 24 hours. Councillor Jones said if Dudley Council did not follow the correct procedures to move on travellers from land, the local authority could be sued. They could sue us if we didn't comply with the law, which is one of the reasons why we can't be more aggressive, he said. Unfortunately, some travellers know the law better than we do. They know how to play it. He added, I am not lumping everyone together. I am not saying everyone is a bad person. There are some respectable people.
The devastated family of Mansour Mahmood, who was stabbed to death in Brierley Hill High Street last October, has spoken out for the first time since his murder. Police are still hunting for their only suspect, Niran Parker Lee, and family members are now offering a £6,000 reward for any information that leads to the 19-year-old's arrest. Parker Lee, also from Brierley Hill, he thought to have fatally knifed the father of two in the stomach during an altercation outside Dixie Chicken Takeaway shortly before 5pm on October the 15th last year. Police suspect he is being harboured by a member of the public. 8 months on from his tragic death, Mr Mahmood's family spoke publicly for the first time, demanding justice to be served. The 24-year-old's father, Khalid, said, I want Niran to be caught as soon as possible so that no one else or another family is hurt. Someone out there is helping him. If anyone knows where he is, please, please tell the police and hand him in. It has been very hard the last 8 months without any answers. We miss Mansour very much. Mr Mahmood was a full-time carer to his two sons, aged 2 and 3, and his wife Aisha, who suffers numbness in her left side as a result of an accident. Speaking to the Dudley News, widowed Mrs. Akhtar said, Mansour was not only a husband, but my best friend as well. Not just a father, but a mother, because he would care for me and our children when I couldn't. He was just a family man and was one in a million. He didn't deserve this. Mansour didn't have a weapon on him. He had an argument, but so what? If you need to defend yourself, you run away. You use your words, or if it needs to get physical, you use your hands, not a knife. His last words to me were that he loved his family and he'd be back soon. Now my children will grow up without a father. Mujtaba Mahmood, 18, described his big brother as a really outgoing individual. He loved spending time with his sons and driving cars. His family hope the £6,000 reward, which they have raised themselves with the help of charity Crime Stoppers, will finally encourage witnesses to come forward. Detective Inspector Harry Harrison said, Niran Parker Lee is actively being sought as our only suspect. Despite a determined effort to arrest him, officers haven't managed to achieve this to date. Today we are appealing again to communities to assist us in bringing Niran Parker Lee to justice. Let me make this clear. If we establish that anyone has been harbouring or providing any assistance to him, we will prosecute them and their crimes will carry substantial terms of imprisonment. The community has the answers. Niran Parker Lee is well known in the community and has no means of supporting himself. We are not looking for anyone else and we will not give up until he is arrested. Parker Lee, who was described as dangerous and not to be approached, has a large scar on his forehead and a tattoo reading Mum on his right wrist. Anyone with information on his whereabouts are urged to call Crime Stoppers anonymously on 0800 555 111.
Fecal bacteria discovered in ice at Costa, Starbucks and Cafe Nero. Concerning levels of fecal bacteria were present in ice at three major high street coffee chains, according to an investigation. Samples from drinks at Costa, Starbucks and Cafe Nero were reportedly found to be contaminated in lab tests carried out by BBC One's consumer series Watchdog Fecal Coliforms, which contained disease-causing pathogens, were present on 7 out of 10 ice samples in Costa, 3 out of 10 in Cafe Nero and 3 in 10 in Starbucks, the BBC said. Tony Lewis, Chartered Institute of Environmental Health, told the programme, The level of contamination of fecal bacteria concerns me a great deal. The bacteria found are opportunistic pathogens, the force of human disease. These should not be present at any level, never mind the significant numbers found. Cleanliness of tables, trays and high chairs at the chains were also tested at 30 branches. A Starbucks spokesman said it takes hygiene extremely seriously and nothing is more important than customer safety. We have moved quickly to conduct our own investigation into the claims about the stores, he added. All employees nationwide have received updated training on our high standards of hygiene, including ice handling. Costa said, we were disappointed with the findings, especially as these stores are all rated very good, with a top hygiene rating of 5. Following these results, we took immediate action to review our food safety procedures and have updated our ice handling guidelines and are in the process of introducing new ice equipment storage across our estate. A spokesman for Cafe Nero described the findings as concerning and added, a thorough investigation is now underway and the appropriate action will be taken. 99% of our stores are rated as very good, good or satisfactory by their local EHO, Environmental Health Officer, making us one of the most highly rated businesses on the high street, he said.
Industrial land which has been blighted by antisocial behaviour will be transformed and turned into 140 homes under new plans. An application has been submitted to Dudley Council for the overhaul of the site off Darkhouse Lane in Cosley. The developer hopes to turn the currently derelict 13-acre site near Rosewood Primary School into a new housing estate of up to 142 homes. Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley said he welcomed the outline planning proposals, which would be a boost to the local area if they get the go-ahead. Councillor Harley said, I welcome any investment in the borough as the council has been through hard times in recent years. We need to create our own new revenue streams and we can do that by building more houses and collecting more business rates. If there is an opportunity for commercial properties, that would be great, and homes are good as well. I think this will provide a boost to the local economy in Cosley. A previous application for the land was approved in 2013, but no development has taken place on the site. That scheme from developer Darkhouse Properties Jersey Limited was for 108 properties to replace the existing derelict former factory buildings. The new plans have been submitted by Clive Jessop from Cannock. The outline proposals would see a noise buffer built to ward against noise pollution. A design and planning statement submitted as part of the application says, despite the site being allocated as employment land, it must be noted the site has remained vacant for some time now and is subject to antisocial behaviour problems during the evenings. It is understood Dudley Council have expressed a willingness to consider the site's potential for residential development. The design of any proposed residential development must be orientated to address the site constraints highlighted. The railway line to the west and coal manufacturing plant to the north have been identified as major potential noise sources, and early noise assessments suggest a minimum 60 metre offset build from these boundaries. This will achieve a substantial amount of public open space that will benefit any residential development and also provide sufficient space for the incorporation of a sympathetic noise mitigation feature.
A police officer has told how he fought off all three London Bridge attackers with just his baton after being blinded in one eye as they swiped at him with their knives. Wayne Marquez, who has spoken publicly for the first time since the terror attack earlier this month, said he thought he was going to die after being stabbed multiple times. The British Transport Police officer was near the start of his Saturday night shift and on patrol with a colleague in the area of London Bridge Station when he heard screams. He said he knew something was wrong when he saw bouncers and customers queuing to get into a nearby bar standing like deer in the headlights. The 38-year-old, who was born in Birmingham but lives in South London, initially thought the disturbance was a pub fight that had spilled out onto the streets, or maybe a gang fight at the most. He added, as I got near the first attacker, I swung at him with everything I had, as hard as I could, straight through the head, trying to go for like a knockout blow. He said he heard the attacker yelp in pain before two more attackers stood over me. PC Marquez, who has since recovered his sight after being wounded just above his right eye, was stabbed numerous times, with major injuries to his head, left leg and left hand. The officer, who has worked with BTP for just under 2 years and was a PCSO with the Met for around 6 years beforehand, described the instant darkness when he was stabbed in the head by one of the terror trio. He said, "He'd hit me so hard that my right eye went lights out straight away. I just went blind." In the fight that he believes lasted somewhere up to 90 seconds, PC Marquez, who had not long recovered from a football injury, was set upon by all three terrorists. He said, "The second and third one, I was basically fighting left to right because I only had one eye, so I'm moving left to right, left to right." At that point, he recalled being stabbed in the leg by the first attacker. He said, "I didn't realise how badly I was hurt at first, but things started to go black and I thought I would die." Thankfully, his next clear memory was of waking up in hospital, feeling a mixture of relief, shock and surprise. After a number of operations, PC Marquez was discharged from hospital almost 3 weeks after the attack and now takes about 25 pills each day. He cannot walk unaided, has a scar above his eye, struggles to grip with his left hand and has lost feeling in the right side of his head where nerves were severed. He hopes that he will be able to return to being a police officer when he is fully recovered. He says, "It's what I do and I'm good at." Looking to the future, he said, "Hopefully with the right help and the right care, I will get my legs back. That will be a great feeling. I am looking forward to getting my legs back, definitely."
A Sturbridge teenager who carried out savage, unprovoked attacks on bus passengers because he was having a bad day has been locked up for 4 years. Tyreek Watson left one terrified young woman needing surgery after breaking her nose with a flurry of punches, and all four of his victims are now too frightened to use public transport. Judge Nicholas Webb told the 19-year-old there was no explanation for what he described as vicious outbreaks of violence against vulnerable people who were clearly targeted. He said Watson took each of his victims who had been travelling on the number 9 bus by surprise, and other passengers on the vehicles had been left in a state of shock. The judge said there was no evidence the teenager, who was of previously good character, had any mental problems, as he had told them he presented a serious risk of future harm to members of the public. Watson, added the judge, appeared to have been emotionless during the attacks on three young women and a man, which were all caught on CCTV. There was a degree of premeditation because the footage showed Watson looking for someone to attack in what was an unusual and worrying case. Howard Seal, prosecuting, said the teenager's first rained blows on a man sitting on the bus in Birmingham Street, Sturbridge, leaving him with a number of facial injuries. Then weeks later, he attacked a young woman for reasons unknown, and she was repeatedly punched in the face. She tried to run away, but Watson followed and continued the brutal attack. A 17-year-old girl was also on the bus, acted as a good Samaritan and tried to help the victim, but Watson struck her a number of times, pulled out clumps of her hair. Watson then got off the bus, Wolverhampton Crown Court was told, and minutes later he boarded another number 9 and punched another young woman who had to undergo surgery to repair her badly fractured nose. This victim, added Mr. Searle, recognised Watson, and the next thing she remembered was coming round after she'd been knocked out in the attack. Watson of Stepping Stone, Sturbridge, admitted one charge of wounding and three of assault, causing actual bodily harm. The judge sent him to a young offenders institute as he extended the period of licence on his release from custody by a year. He told Watson his attitude was concerning and it was clear he was dangerous. Rachel Pennington, for Watson, said he couldn't explain his actions. She added, "He'd been having a bad day. He lost his temper and he knows there was no need to hit anyone." She said the teenager was full of remorse, not only for the victims of his violence, but also for the people on the buses who had to witness the attacks. He accepted his behaviour had impacted on their lives, said Miss Pennington, who added, what he did was out of character. It was behaviour that came out of the blue over his failure to control his emotions.
Wolverhampton Crown Court has heard that a tax office worker acted despicably by fraudulently claiming more than £56,000 in tax credits over 7 years. Rebecca Gray, a customer services officer at the Dudley Tax Office, was in a unique position to know that what she was doing was wrong, a judge told her, but he spared her a jail sentence. Gray, aged 32, had lied when she claimed she had split from her partner and moved into her grandfather's Wolverhampton home, making her eligible for a single parent's tax credit allowance. The mother of four had also understated the amount of maternity pay she received, entitling her to more maternity credit, whilst overstating the childcare cover she needed. She joined the Dudley Tax Office in 2006 when she started making a joint claim with her partner for child tax credits, said Miss Lynette McClement, prosecuting. She alleged her relationship with her partner broke down in July 2014 and started claiming single parents' tax credits, when in fact she was still living with him in Lower Gornal in Dudley. But on various official forms after that date, both had named the other as next of kin or emergency contact. They made council tax payments from a joint Lloyds bank account registered at the Lower Gornal address. The court heard she was double claiming for the cost of childcare. Her partner was not facing similar charges because the false claims were made in her name. Gray, who was sacked from her job at the tax office, was arrested in March last year. A search warrant was issued for the Lower Gornal address where further evidence was found of the couple's cohabitation, including documents and, in the master bedroom, women's paraphernalia such as jewellery, handbags and makeup. A check with her grandfather showed she had not lived at his address for 11 years. Gray had benefited by £100 a week in maternity benefits and £275 a week in childcare costs. The total overpayment between 2009 and 2016 was £56,344, the court heard. It is expected this will be subject to a court case under the Proceeds of Crime Act to recoup the money. Gray of Brookdale, Lower Gornal, Dudley, pleaded guilty to four offences of contravening the Tax Credit Act. She was sentenced to 2 years jail, suspended for 2 years and given a 12-month supervision order. Recorder Nicholas Siffret, QC, told her, "You behaved despicably. You were in a unique position to know that what you were doing was wrong. You richly deserve to go to prison immediately. And if it wasn't for the fact you have four children, one of them just 6 months old, that is where you would be going. You behaved extremely stupidly."
Panels are being removed from outside four tower blocks in Albury and West Bromwich after failing latest government tests in the wake of the Grenfell fire. Sandwell Council started removing panels from balconies and some windows at four blocks of flats yesterday when the issue emerged after safety checks. Council officials today moved to reassure residents the tower blocks were safe and the work was being carried out as a precautionary measure. The blocks affected are Ashbury Court and Lawrence Court in Brandhall, Albury, and Neil House and Macaulay House in West Bromwich. Safety checks have been carried out to blocks across the borough in the wake of the Grenfell Tower blaze in London. Around 80 people are feared to have been killed in the fire on June the 14th. Tests only need to be carried out on aluminium composite panels, which are only fixed around balconies and some windows at the four buildings. These panels are different to cladding, which is a material which completely covers the outside of buildings. Although the panelling complies with current building regulations, as a result of the test, council bosses took the decision to remove and replace the panelling with immediate effect. The main cladding of these buildings is made of a different material, though this work only affects certain panels. It is unclear at this stage why the panels met current building regulations but failed to pass latest government tests. Sandwell Council's Cabinet Member for Housing, Councillor Kerry Carmichael, said, "Firstly, we'd like to reassure residents that they are safe to remain in the buildings while we carried out work to remove the panels in question. The main cladding on these four blocks is not the same as that used at Grenfell Tower, nor is it made of aluminium composite like the panelling we are having to remove. We acted as soon as safety issues came to light about panelling on balconies and around some windows at these four blocks. Sandwell Council Chief Executive Jan Britton added, while the panels comply with current building regulations, in light of test results and recent events, we are taking this action because the safety of our residents always comes first. Fire wardens have been on site at all four buildings overnight and will continue to carry out regular patrols until all panels have been removed. In addition to this, council staff have been providing information and reassurance to residents. Safety checks to smoke alarms and detectors will also be carried out every morning and afternoon. Phil Loach, the West Midlands Chief Fire Officer, said, we absolutely understand that this is a time of concern for high-rise residents. We continue to work closely with our colleagues in all of the West Midlands several local authority areas.
A group planning a tribute to honour Stourbridge hero Frank Foley are meeting this week to iron out the details of the new statue in Mary Stevens Park. Major Foley was a British spy working undercover as passport control officer in pre-war Nazi Berlin, where he provided thousands of Jews with the documents they needed to escape Germany by bending the rules when stamping passports or issuing visas. He also hid Jews in his own home and even went to Sachsenhausen concentration camp with visas to enable prisoners to leave. He settled in Stourbridge when he retired and lived at Evesham Road until his death in 1958. Relatives of Major Foley, as well as representatives of the Holocaust Educational Trust, Borough artist Steve Field and local councillors and residents will be met on Friday, June the 30th at the Sons of Rest building in Norton Park. The meeting is the next step after Dudley North MP Ian Austin raised £40,000 from the government to meet the costs of the statue. Mr. Austin said, I am absolutely delighted that we will be meeting to discuss the statue to honour Frank Foley. We are proposing a bronze statue of him seated on a bench in the park so that people will be able to sit next to him and reflect on his heroism and what it teaches us about fighting for freedom, democracy and tolerance. Frank Foley refused to stand by when people were being persecuted because of their race and religion, and his heroism helped save 10,000 people from the Holocaust when other European countries were sending Jews to concentration camps. Britain provided a safe haven for tens of thousands of refugees. I think this period defines what it means to be British. Our unique response to the Holocaust and role of the war gives us the right to claim a particular attachment to the values of democracy, equality, freedom, fairness and tolerance.
A veteran bus driver who was sacked for running a red light in Dudley has won an unfair dismissal claim against his former bosses. Abdul Jabbar, 59, of Dudley, was sacked by National Express West Midlands in October 2015 after CCTV footage captured him running the light in King Street. But he sued, claiming the dismissal was totally over the top for one mistake in an unblemished career behind the wheel. Now, after a hearing before an employment tribunal, Judge Glyn Lloyd has ruled the sacking unfair and that Mr. Jabbar is entitled to a compensation payout. The claimant is a bus driver of exemplary record, said the judge in his ruling, which was delayed at the end of the tribunal hearing in April. He has worked for the respondent without any disciplinary taint for some 37 years. He has been free of any accident or driving penalty for some 32 years. What he did was, and we accept it was, a five-second momentary lapse of concentration on his part by a driver who sits in the cab facing the unpredictable environment of busy city roads 8 to 10 hours each day. Considering the totality of the evidence, we find that his summary dismissal in those circumstances was disproportionate. The tribunal heard Mr. Jabbar had claimed that his sacking was an attempt by his employer to get an expensive older employee off its books. Pakistani heritage Mr. Jabbar also claimed that a British driver would not have had the same punishment. He pointed to the case of a colleague who around the same time had also run a red light, but got away with a final written warning. However, despite ruling the sacking unfair, Judge Lloyd said Mr Jabbar's age and race discrimination claims had not been proved. The case will return to the Employment Tribunal next month for an assessment of Mr Jabbar's damages unless an agreement can be reached out of court.
And with that final news item from Beth, we now make way for this week's notices. So it's goodbye from Louise.
And bye-bye from Margaret.
And goodbye from Beth.